Page 497, Subject and Object, by Theodore W. Adorno. A series of loosely organized but tightly argued comments on what is perhaps the central issue of epistemology, subject and object, first appeared in 1969 in the collection Stichworte, the last publication Adorno himself supervised. Difficult as these comments are on the first reading, they contain some of the most illuminating formulations of the constitution problem, that is, the question of through what perceptual and conceptual filters we constitute objects and events from raw stimuli. Unlike Lukács, the critical theorists did not yield to the temptation of collapsing subject and object in a particular historical agent. Adorno emphasizes the necessary gap between subject and object so that the dynamic of the self-constitution, the dynamic of consciousness progressively liberating itself from the uncomprehended powers that guided it, would not be replaced by just another agency guiding it. An epistemological category, subjectivity, is not an undesirable addition to the objective qualities of reason, best eliminated if we want reliable knowledge. There can be no knowledge without a perspective from which it is gained. The fact that this perspective may be and usually is collective makes it no less subjective. To engage in reflections on subject and object poses the problem of stating what we are to talk about. The terms are patently equivocal. Subject, for instance, may refer to the particular individual as well as to general attributes, to consciousness in general in the language of Kant's Prolegomena. Page 498. The equivocation is not removable simply by terminological clarification, for the two meanings have reciprocal need of each other. One is scarcely to be grasped without the other. The element of individual humanity, what Schelling calls egoity, cannot be thought apart from any concept of the subject without any remembrance of it. Subject would lose all meaning. Conversely, as soon as we reflect upon the human individual as an individual at all in the form of a general concept, as soon as we cease to mean only the present existence of some particular person, we have already turned it into a universal similar to that which came to be explicit in the idealist concept of the subject. The very term particular person requires a generic concept, lest it be meaningless. Even in proper names, a reference to that universal is still implied. They mean one who is called by that name, not by any other, and one stands elliptically for one human being. If on the other hand, we try to define the two terms so as to avoid this type of complication, we would land in an aporia that adds to the problematics of defining, as modern philosophy since Kant has noted time and again. For in a way, the concepts of subject and object, or rather, the things they intend, have priority before all definition. Defining means that something objective, no matter what it may be in itself, is subjectively captured by means of a fixed concept. Hence, the resistance offered by defining by subject and object to determine their meanings takes reflection on the very thing which definition cuts off for the sake of conceptual flexibility. Hence, the advisability at the outset of taking up the words subject and object as the well-honed philosophical language hands them to us as a historical sediment, not, of course, sticking to such conventionalism, but continuing with critical analysis. The starting point would be the allegedly naive, though already mediated, view that a knowing subject, whatever its kind, was confronting a known object, whatever its kind. The reflection, which in philosophical terminology goes by the name of intentio obliquia, is then a re-relation of that ambiguous concept of the object to a no less ambiguous concept of the subject. The second reflection reflects the first, more closely determining those vague subject and object concepts for their contents' sake. The separation of subject and object is both real and illusory. True, because in the cognitive realm, it serves to express the real separation of dichotomy of the human condition, a coercive development. Page 499. False, because the resulting separation not be hypostasized, not magically transformed into an invariant. This contradiction in the separation of subject and object is imparted to epistemology, though they cannot be thought away as separated. The pseudos of the separation is manifested in their being mutually mediated. The object by the subject, and even more, in different ways, the subject by the object. The separation is no sooner established directly without mediation than it becomes ideology, which is indeed its normal form. The mind will then usurp the place of something absolutely independent, which it is not. Its claim of independence heralds the claim of dominance. One radically parted from the object, the subject reduces it to its own measure. The subject swallows the object, forgetting how much it is an object itself. The picture of a temporal or extra-temporal original state of happy identity between subject and object is romantic. However, a wishful projection at times, but today no more than a lie. The undifferentiated state before the subject's formation was the thread of the blind web of nature, a myth. It was in protest against it that the great religions had their truth content. Besides, to be undifferentiated is not to be done, even in Platonic dialectics. Unity requires diverse items of which it is the unity. For those who live to see it, the new horror of separation will transfigure the old horror of chaos. Both are the same, ever same. The fear of yawning meaningless makes one forget a fear which once upon a time was no less dreadful, that of the vengeful gods of which Epicurean materialism and the Christian fear not wanted to relieve mankind. The only way to accomplish this is through the subject. If it were liquidated rather than sublated in a higher form, the effect would be regression, not just of consciousness, but a regression to real barbarism. Fate, myth, bondage to nature comes from total social tutelage, from an age in which no eyes had yet been opened by self-reflection. An age in which subject did not yet exist. Instead of a collective practice conjuring that age to return, the spell of the old undifferentiatedness should be obliterated. Its prolongation is the sense of identity of a mind that repressively shapes it other in its own image. If speculation and the state of reconciliation were permitted, neither the undistinguished unity of subject and object nor their anti-ethical hostility would be conceivable in it. Rather, the communication of what was distinguished. Not until then would the concept of communication as an object concept come in its own. The present one is so infamous because the best there is, the potential of an agreement between people and things is betrayed to an interchange between subjects according to the requirements of subjective reason. Page 500. In its proper place, even epistemologically, the relationship of subject and object would lie in the realization of peace among men as well as between men and their other. Peace is the state of distinctiveness without domination, with the distinct participation in each other. In epistemology, subject is mostly understood to mean the transcendental subject. According to idealist doctrine, it will either construct the objective world with raw material along Kantian lines or, since Fichte engender that world itself. The critics of idealism were not the first to discover that this transcendental subject constituting the substance of experience was abstracted from living individuals. It is evident that the abstract concept of transcendental subject, its thought forms, their unity, and the original productivity of consciousness presupposes what it promises to bring about, actual live individuals. This notion was present in the idealist philosophies. Kant, in his chapter on psychological paralogism, did try to develop a constitutive hierarchic difference in principle between transcendental and empirical subject, but his successors, notable Fichte and Hegel, as well as Schopenhauer, resorted to logical subtleties to cope with the immense difficulty of the circle. They frequently had recourse to the Aristotelian motive that what comes first for our consciousness. In this case, the empirical subject is not the first in itself. That as its condition or its origin, it postulates the transcendental subject. Even Husserl's polemics against psychologism, along with the distinction of genesis and validity, continues the line of that mode of argument. It is apoplectic. The conditioned is to be justified as unconditional, the derived as primary, that nothing can be true except the first, or, as Nietzsche critically phrased it, what has not come into being, is a topos of the entire Western tradition. We find it repeated here. There is no mistaking the ideological function of the thesis. The more individuals are really degraded to function of the social totality as it becomes more systematized, the more will man, pure and simple, man as a principle with the attributes of creativity and absolute domination, be consoled by exaltation of his mind. Yet for all that, the question of the transcendental subject reality weighs heavier than appears in its sublimation as pure mind, fully so in the critical retraction of idealism. In a sense, also, idealism would be the last to admit this. The transcendental subject is more real, that is to say, more determined for the real conduct of men and for the resulting society, than those psychological individuals from which the transcendental one was abstracted. Page 501. They have little to say in the world, having on their part turned into appendages of the social apparatus and ultimately into ideology. The living human individual, as he is forced to act in the role for which he has been marked internally as well, is the homo economicus incarnate. Closer to the transcendental subject than to the living individual for which he immediately cannot but take himself. To this extent, idealistic theory was realistic and did not need to feel embarrassed when charged with idealism by opponents. What shows up faithfully in the doctrine of the transcendental subject is the priority of the relations. abstractly rational ones, detached from the human individuals and their relationships, that have their model in